and welcome to Two Fat Expats. And when we say fat, we're not talking bathroom scales or excess luggage. Two Fat Expats are all about making the most of your expat adventure and filling it up with as much as you can so that when it's all over, there's no regrets. You've lived a fat expat life. I'm Kirsty Rice. I'm an Aussie expat who's based in Doha, Qatar. And I'm joined by Nikki Moffat.
Hello.
Another Aussie, but Nikki's in Hamburg, Germany. We've lived in 12 countries between us. We consider ourselves experts in all matters of the geographically challenged. Between us, we've given birth in 6 countries, and we know what it's like to pack up yet another kitchen, start looking for another job, and wave goodbye to that brilliant hairdresser it took you 12 months to find. We've both made those first steps into the brand new office, or worse, the new school, and at times we've found ourselves jobless, friendless, and starting afresh all over again. Each week we talk to expats who are from all over the world, and we discuss our favourite finds, our biggest stuff-ups, and we get the best tips for packing it all in. Okay, are we ready to go? Let's do this. Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
Oh, Kirsty Rice, I'm okay. I'm tearing my hair out. I'm freaking out. I'm not sleeping and I'm suffering the daylight savings change, but I don't want to give up daylight savings. So just so you know, EU countries voted last year to get rid of daylight savings. Who are these people?
Oh, wouldn't they be in the dark for even longer if that was the way?
Well, this is the thing. They have to decide on summer or winter time permanently by the beginning of 2021. But what does that mean? Like Germany decides one and Italy decides another. So now there's an hour time difference between Germany and Italy. I don't know. Anyway, it's all happening. It's all coming to a head.
So weird, isn't it? Because like in Australia, Perth is always 2.5 hours behind everyone else. And I actually heard someone use the phrase at work today in one of our Slack channels. Someone didn't get the joke straight away, and the expression someone used to kind of mock them was, "And good evening to our Perth viewers this evening."
That's funny.
Yes, because that's always what sort of used to happen. You know, you'd be watching the cricket, and so 2 hours, and good evening to our Perth viewers this evening who have just joined us.
Because they've been having the news or something, yeah.
Yes, yeah. Okay, Nikki, let's move on, shall we? We will talk about today's podcast, which is all about expat book groups.
That's right, Kirsty. So this podcast began because we received a message from Christine. And Christine is in your Two Fat Expats book club in Doha. Mm-hmm. And she sent a SpeakPipe message, and we love to receive SpeakPipe messages, which of course you can do either by a SpeakPipe app on your phone or via, if you have Chrome, go on our website, www.twofatexpats.com. I digress. Back to Christine.
Hi, Kirsty. It's Christine from Doha. I'm being very selfish here, but I would love to hear you interview a few ladies from our Doha Two Fat Expats book club. The reason being is I think we're just so diverse, and we've all come from different backgrounds, different countries, different professions, and I don't think we would have connected in the real world. I think that it's really interesting how we've bonded and we have come together over our love of books. And it would be really, really interesting to hear a little bit of background and see how book clubs bring women together. So that's my thought. Take care. Love the podcast, and hope to see you soon. Bye-bye.
I need to say, Christine has done this all on her own back. There was no
really. You weren't paying her. You didn't give her 50 for that.
Prodding on my behalf, I can promise you, because it was news to me as well. But I did think it was really lovely. Our book group started, I need to thank my friend Carol for that. And that was because my friend Carol, who lives in Australia, her book group had been to Italy. And I had serious book group envy. Like Carol used to mention her book group quite a bit, and I'd think, God, her book group sounds good. Like, do you know what I mean? When people talk about those women relationships they have and things they talk about and where they go and what they do, and they were super organized and very interesting. And anyway, they ended up in Italy, and that was the last straw for me. I was like, I want a book group like that book group. So
when's your trip to Italy?
Yeah, exactly. We're talking about it. Don't you worry. So I can't remember, Nikki, whether I did this on the 4 Kids 20 Suitcases page or whether I did it in the 2 FedEx Pats group, but I think it was the 4 Kids 20 Suitcases page. I put a note out saying exactly that, telling the story of Carol, saying that I'd like to do a book group, and was there anyone else in Doha that was interested? And there was a flock of women, and then within a few weeks we had our very first book group. So it's really quite lovely to think that here we are a couple of years down the track, and someone in the group loves it so much that they've said, hey, I would like to talk about this more and have other people know about it. It's lovely. So, Nikki, expat book groups, are they more diverse?
Well, yes and no, I guess. In some ways they can be less diverse and in some ways they can be more diverse. I mean, I've been in both kinds. In Hong Kong with Kerry Richards, I mean, I think we were nearly all Australian and we nearly all lived in the same apartment complex. And we nearly all our kids played together every day. So we were not really diverse. Yes. I have to say we had a couple of lovely English ladies as well, who one of them might have even lived up the street. But honestly, it was not incredibly diverse. Yes. However, here I belong to a book group which is incredibly diverse, and ages, nationalities, its viewpoints, etc. And it's totally opposite. It's just different. There's not anything wrong or right about both situations, but we were in a microcosm in Hong Kong in this tiny little place, and we had this amazing, fabulous book club.
Yes.
And, you know, it doesn't mean it's any better or any worse than here. So I would say they could be more diverse, but not necessarily.
I think the similarities between your everyday book group and your expat book group are probably wine seems to be the common thing, women, food, reading, and lots of laughter. But I think one of the things possibly that an expat book group offers you is, like the other night in our book group, one of our people, English is her second language, but she had read a book in her husband's language, which is also not English, but not her language. She's got three going on. And she was like, oh, I read this amazing book. Oh, but it was when I was in Belgium. Oh, now what would the title of it be in English? Sort of searched it up and then saw that this book had been huge in Belgium and had now just been translated into English and was going to, you know, you could just see it's just going to make its way, and this author is about to be, you know, a blockbuster. So I think things like that can be really interesting. And then it's just obviously the conversations, because when people start to relate personal stories, and those personal stories might be of when they lived in Poland or when they're in Moscow or, you know, when they lived in Nigeria or whatever, that's when things get, I think, get really interesting.
Yeah. So what you did, Kirsty, was you asked your members to send us messages via SpeakPipe, and to respond, you gave them a few question prompts. Much like some book clubs, Kirsty, in fact, have question prompt guides for their discussions. And so there are a few questions you asked, but here is, I'd just like to present to you a little collation of all the intros of the members of your book club.
Please let the songs finish. Hi, Nikki and Kirsty. This is Christine from Canada. I've been living in Qatar for the past 13 years, and I joined the Doha 2 Fat Expats book club last year for a few reasons, mostly social. Number one, Kirsty Rice was hosting the first meetup, and at some point there may have been mention of sweet treats and fizzy drinks, but if you're going to be airing this, please tell everyone that I joined because of my infinite need to expand my reading repertoire and to maybe push my literary limits.
My name is Sam. I am from Western Canada, and I am coming up on my 3-year expat-iversary here in Doha. I joined book club to get me out of my expat bubble. all I did was go to work and meet people from work and hang out with people from work. And so joining book club was a way to meet new people here in Doha.
Hi, Kirsty and Nikki. This is Sue from Australia. I've been here in Qatar for 15 years, and I definitely am the flaky member of this book group. I suspect I'm also the oldest. I'm definitely the least organized. I think I'm about three books behind, and I always feel like the kid who hasn't done their homework.
Hello, my name is Katerina. I'm from the Czech Republic, and I've been living in Doha for the last 5 years.
Hello, this is Catherine. I'm a British expat living in Doha and previously lived in Sydney, Australia too. I've been in book clubs for years and was really keen to hear about the Doha Too Fat Expat book club, so was happy when I got to join. I've met lots of new friends and read some really interesting and enjoyable books.
Hi, this is Kelly. I grew up near Miami, Florida in the United States, and this is my 7th year here in Doha. I joined the book group because I love to read and I love talking about books, but mostly for community. We have a high turnover rate here in Doha, so I feel like I'm always saying goodbye to someone dear and always looking to make new friends. And as an introvert, book groups are kind of an easy way to make new friends. And I was in one in my last country also, the Commonwealth of Dominica in the Caribbean.
Hey, this is Trish. I'm one of the members of the Too Fat Expats Doha Book Club. I'm also one of the exiting members because I'm leaving Doha soon after 13 years here, and I'm just sad that I didn't meet these ladies earlier than the last sort of 12 to 18 months. I've loved the book club. They've even put up with me not actually physically reading the book, but downloading it and listening to it in the hours and hours that we spend in traffic in Doha. Going to miss you all. Thanks for letting me in. Bye.
Okay, so we've lost about 4 or 5 members over the summer, so we've just recruited. What we've tried to do, there's sort of a bit of an unspoken rule, and I guess we're lucky that we can use the Too Fat Expats group, is that we try not to have people that know each other, if that makes sense, Nikki. So we don't have a friend of a friend. Nobody puts their hand up and says, can I bring my friend Susie? It's when people sort of reach out and ask about the Too Fat Expats Doha group, they'll go on the list. And then, we're just trying to sort of bring in people from different countries just to make it sort of that little bit more interesting.
About what you're saying about books in other languages, the book club that I belong to here, we recently read a book by Alana Ferrante, My Beautiful Friend, My Brilliant Friend. Have you read that book?
No. And
Alana Ferrante is a nom de plume. We don't know who Alana Ferrante is, but she's Italian, and the book was originally written in Italian. So when you read a book that's been translated, and I guess the same with The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, was originally written in, Scandinavian, people don't yell at me, but I think Norwegian. I find it so interesting to see how the translations are done.
Yes.
To think, I wonder, when something evokes a certain picture or there's a certain phrasing, I always think, wow, I wonder what that was. I don't always, but sometimes I think that's so impactful and emotional in English. I wonder what that is in Italian or a different language, because people that translate books, props to them. So the next question that you asked and that some of your compatriots answered was, what was your favorite book at book club? And so here are the answers to that.
I've got the book as well. The book is great.
My favorite books so far have been The Alice Network and The Tattooist at Auschwitz, both historical fiction, which is not a genre I normally pick up on my own. And I also love The Great Alone, which we didn't read as a group but was recommended by one of the members.
So my favorite books and favorite conversations, difficult questions. The favorite book has to be Becoming by Michelle Obama. I think it lived up to all the hype and was really interesting for fresh perspectives on being a mum, being a woman and developing your career.
I will probably go straight to the two most memorable books. The first one would be The Cows, which is memorable not in the way of, oh, it's a beautiful book, but it's a funny, cringy, hilarious book. And the second one would be The 15 Dogs, which I still kind of feel, what? So, yeah, definitely worth a try.
Favorite book, probably, well, the book that I've read, actually, probably the Michelle Obama book was great, and I liked the chatter that we had about that. Anyway, thanks, Kirsty and Nikki, for a fabulous podcast, and, yeah, I'll keep coming to book group.
Yes, and of course, Nikki, you went and saw Michelle Obama.
I did, and I loved that book fiercely, and for the reasons that your book club mentioned. But just when I saw it, it just took a tiny bit of luster off, because I've explained before about how when I saw her, it was practically the Oprah interview just on stage in front of me. Yes. And with a different person asking the questions. And I just, you know, one of those things that seeing your heroes are like, is it going to work out for you? So, look, no doubt she's an incredibly talented woman and has forged ahead in many careers and done amazing things. But it all worked out. But I just, you know, for me it was a bit of a letdown. But it doesn't stop me loving the book. It just stops me loving her a little bit.
I think what happens with the Michelle Obama story, and I feel like with the group, it was the realization that a lot of it was quite relatable as an expat, and that was that, you know, they'd had to move, she'd had to completely put her family in a different spot, and she became the cheerleader. In this case, she wasn't the lead spouse in, you know, when it came to working. I think it's that thing in a book group where you all suddenly get on the same train of thought and you can all identify with the same idea, and then people start getting excited because they start wanting to, oh my God, yes. You know, that was like, and I think that was one of those nights, do you know, where everybody could identify certain pieces of their life, of whether it was the study or the moving or the guilt with the children, or watching someone else be really into their career and really having to be very giving with your time and patience, but also trying to forge out, you know, well, what was right for you and getting your moment. And she was just, I mean, she's so, so freaking clever. Yeah, great book. But, yeah, it was a great night.
There's always those times where someone sits a little bit more quietly when the book's being discussed and just sips the wine and smiles and sort of, and you think, oh, they haven't really read it, have they?
Yeah.
But it was one of those books where everyone had read it. And did anyone not like it? Did you have any sort of commentary?
No, everyone liked it, and everyone found it quite insightful. And I think what was interesting was I'm not sure that everyone walked away thinking Obama was as fantastic as maybe they first did. As well, I think that they could see his marriage in a more relatable. He suddenly became not Obama the man, but Obama the husband, almost.
Yeah, which is good. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah,
taking down a peg or two. And then I, of course, Kirsty, another question you asked was what I like most about book club, or what best conversation we've had at book club. So here's a collation. This one's a little bit longer of all the answers that we got in.
Mm.
That was so cute.
How beautiful was that?
Yeah.
What I love about book club is really just the laughs, and just like, it's a great group of women. The diversity is amazing. And there's just this sense of community around a shared love of reading and eating and maybe drinking. My favorite book conversation so far has definitely been around Michelle Obama's becoming. I related so much of it to my expat life, and just her solo parenting stints, her ability to get up and reestablish herself and her family in a new place, her career choices, even walking away from her career at one point, just her desire to keep things real for her family and to find a way to inject bits of her into a life that she'd chosen, but that was really designed around someone else. just sharing that book and dissecting it as expat women, I think really helped all of us appreciate how isolating and overwhelming her stint in that role must have been.
And this book club is unlike any I've ever been a part of, mostly because nobody knew each other. It was kind of strangers from everywhere. And that changes up the conversation that happens. You don't sort of default into catching up on gossip because nobody knows each other. You have these really interesting conversations that come from the book and come from expat life. And I've never been part of a book club that takes care of each other. If somebody has surgery, we organize food for that person. We work on charitable activities together, and it just comes together organically. And so it's just this refreshing highlight of my month, going to book club. Plus, it makes me stop what I'm doing in my busy life and read something that I might not have considered on my own, but I generally always enjoy. And if I don't, I have people to talk about it with.
Really loved all the ladies' company, and even loved the maximum of 5 minutes that we usually spent actually talking about the book each time we meet.
My favorite conversation is probably a toss-up between talking about Michelle Obama's book and Kirstie's evil hairdryer, or a conversation that we had on a WhatsApp group when someone was running late and someone said, just put grandma to bed early and make a run for it. So we get a lot of humor out of our group.
The favorite conversation, I can't pick just one, but I love listening to everyone's different experiences, depending on their background and where they're from. I love the giggles we have about books like Erotic Stories for Punjabi Women, I think it was called. There was also a conversation about hand dryers and wobbling necks. Not really sure what that was about, but remember giggling a lot. So love getting together with the Tifa Expat Book Club ladies, and thanks very much, Kirsty, for setting it up. See you on Wednesday.
And the reason I love the book club is because you talk about books, but a lot of other things from so many different perspectives. The group is so rich on experience and backgrounds and different family situations. So you will definitely get to have conversations which you wouldn't have otherwise, talk about topics which you wouldn't have otherwise. And yeah, just it's just great. So should you doubt about joining a book club, do it. Absolutely.
Anyway, I love this group. I love the conversation of like-minded ladies. I had no idea what to expect. I've been wanting to join a book club for about 20 years. So I thought on my first night I was going to get grilled about the book, and I was so nervous about people asking me to say something intellectual. But anyway, it's just fabulous to be with a group of ladies who really make me read things I probably wouldn't choose to read, and just be, yeah, a different set of friends in Doha.
But I think one of the things I really enjoy the most is that because I'm not in the same social circle, work or school with everybody else, when I come to book group, it's kind of like leaving all of the stress and drama of my life behind if I want to, or I have the option to bring it up and to share, and we're pretty amazing group of women. So it's nice to have that kind of safe, supportive, non-judgmental place to read a book, share some stories, and drink some wine.
I just remembered something that Kirsty asked us, what made us nervous heading into the first book club. And surprisingly, I wasn't nervous. I was really excited about meeting all these new women. But despite the fact that we were this amazing, diverse group of women from different backgrounds, different professions, different nationalities, it seemed that we had a theme going on with our names, and I never thought I'd be able to wrap my head around it. So the names went something like this. Kirsty, Kelly, Kirsty, Chris, Christine, Chrissy, Catherine, Katarina. We threw in some S's for good measure. So we had a Sue, a Sam, and a Stacy. And we rounded it off with a Taisha, a Trish, and a Tracy.
So yeah, I wasn't sure I'd ever get those straight, but we're good now, and loving every single one of them. I think I finally got the name straight. Love the podcast, love the book club. Talk soon. Bye bye.
Okay, Kirstie, two things. What is Kirstie's evil hairdryer? And then after that, I need to know more about the erotic stories for Punjabi women.
Yes. I think that was one of the first ones that we read. Okay, the evil hairdryer, I'm going to have to admit, I can't remember the exact details, but I think it was something, because I thought it was something I wrote and then we talked about at the book group rather than a conversation at the book group. I can't remember, but it was the general gist was me drying my hair and the hairdryer hitting my neck and my neck wobbling around. No, as in imagine the air your neck and my neck going in the wind. And me saying what a cruel, cruel world it was because I'd caught a glimpse of my neck drying with the hairdryer and there was sort of no hiding it. But I don't know, I might have to get someone to elaborate and tell me exactly what that was about. But that's my vague recollection. But what I can tell you, Erotic Stories for Punjabi Women, is a great book. It was about a woman whose name was Nikki. She kind of has distanced herself from her Punjabi family and lives a very London existence. And I think I can't remember now the details. She gets in some sort of strife money-wise, and it means she has to take a job sort of teaching creative writing at the local community centre, which is right in the heart of the Punjabi community. And because of a bit of a miscommunication, many of the Sikh widows who show up are really actually expecting to learn basic English literacy. They're not there for a short writing course. Anyway, in amongst it, one of the widows sort of shares some erotic fiction with the class, and then Nikki realizes that they have this wealth of fantasies and memories, and so she teaches them how to write their stories. But at the same time, she's kind of trying to protect them and tell them that they probably need to keep this quiet from the brotherhood. And it was really interesting because I hadn't realized that when Punjabi women become widows, they're essentially ignored. You know, society dictates that they're no longer able to find love or romance. And so they really spend a lot of time with each other. So yeah, it was good. It was very, very good. So Erotic Stories for Punjabi Women. And I think it was a bit of a joke when we chose it. I think one of our members, yeah, I don't want to embarrass her, but her name's Trish, but she was she was talking about reading, you know, wild stories, and it came up as a bit of a joke as, okay, we'll do this one, and it was great. So, Nikki, I want to know from you, what do you think makes a good book group? Because we've put a note out on the Two Fat Expats Facebook group, and there's some brilliant comments that we'll get to in a minute. But it really got me thinking. There were a couple of people that wrote what their rules were and their ideas were, and I thought, oh, I've got to steal that. We have to go back to that. But I think, what do you think is the perfect size?
Well, it's strange because the book group I'm in now is massive. As I've said, it's a massive Facebook group, and then whoever can turn up turns up. And it's now closed for new entries. It's a waiting list because so many people are turning up every time there's a meeting. And it really is too many people. So I think I went to one, there was like 30 people there.
Oh, my gosh. And where do you meet? Is it in someone's house or?
No, in like the back room of a restaurant. Like it was a big room in a restaurant.
Oh, 30 is too many. And so do you sit at all different tables or?
Well, no, there were tables set up. It was like a big U-shape, like a banquet kind of set up. And so everyone sat on one side of the table so the waiters could get in and out with the drinks. And the food. And that's just too many people for me. Mm. You don't, although you can hide if you haven't read the book. But yeah. You still have to do, as you know, in our book club, you have to do the one word that represents the book to you. That's and right. If you're trying to hide because you haven't read the book, you want to go last, but then you run out of words. But you do get an idea about what everyone else is saying. So, yeah, I think that's – so I think if you have 15 to 20 people, because not everyone can come all the time, right? So for me, the perfect size, particularly if it's someone's house, is going to be sort of around 12 people, right?
Yeah.
But there's always going to be people who have traveling for work, have a sick child, you know, their dog is ill, they're at the vet. You know, there's always going to be someone who can't come for various reasons. So I think if you have sort of 15 to 20 people in a group and then, you know, if everyone can come all the time, well, then when people leave, you don't replacement until you get below. For me, that's for me. Yeah. And you do need to have a very particular admin person. So you can't, I don't think you can be handing that round a lot. Maybe you can say one person for a year. So Kirsty organizes this year, calendar year or September to June or something. But you do need to have one person because otherwise you lose a bit of consistency in your approach. And consistency in approach is important for people to feel that it's a good, safe, happy, fun place.
Yeah. And I think quite often in expat book groups, you need to set the dates and decide the books because when some people just can't get their hands on the books, so it means that when they go home at Christmas, they can buy all the books and bring them back. Do you know, when I lived in Jakarta, I remember when it was your turn for book group, you had to buy 12 copies of the book. Because that was the only way they could get everybody to, because you know, it was back in the days pre-Kindle. I can't believe I even lived pre-Kindle, but I did. So there was a lot of, okay, well, when it's your turn, you buy the books, you bring them back, you hand them out. You know, people would pay you and stuff.
Well, the dates, yes. And I like your idea about the diversity that you have within your book group. So everybody just having one per country or, you know, one per compound, whatever.
I really liked Sam's comment when she said, because we don't know each other as well, our default reaction isn't to move towards gossip. And I actually don't think there's anyone who has children at the same school as me even. And, you know, we have lots of working women and then we have non-working and we have people with young children and we have people with older children. So that sort of really gives you great depth as well. I love that. I had completely forgotten about the charity work when Sam said we'd done charity work. We have.
Yes. Yeah, I was interested in that.
I'd just forgotten that we did. You know, we've done the whole shoe boxes and filling them with gifts to go to women who have become pregnant and are being deported. And, you know, we just quietly went about our business and I can't remember how many boxes we ended up doing, but it was a huge amount between, you know, like a small group of us of, you know, just wrapping Christmas paper and getting together supplies and making up different boxes and just sitting around chatting and having a glass of wine while we did it. And it was just lovely. And that I definitely do want to go away with these guys now because I think we've created something really special. And so the plan is for us is to, when we find a book that has a destination in it that we're all quite intrigued by, we'll say that we have to go to that destination.
To have your meeting. I think that's good. So I found an article called, I was reading lots of book club things, but How to Start a Book Club That Doesn't Suck. Yeah. And it covered a lot of the things that we're talking about. So decide who you're inviting. Decide the purpose of what kind of books you want to read. So, you know, there are some book clubs that read, you know, art history, like that, because all the people are interested in that. And then some book clubs that don't read nonfiction or only read nonfiction. So I think that's important to sort of have a general idea. And the planning, of course. And then I actually think some structure is important. So you don't have to go prepared with notes and questions, but you do have to say, okay, now we're going to talk about the book.
Yeah.
And, you know, Did you like it or didn't you like it? What appealed to you? And that's where we need our Nicoles, the people who are in charge, to sort of take control of that little bit of the meeting to make sure that, one, the book gets discussed, and two, that, you know, there's a little bit of structure to the discussion.
Yeah, because I think particularly if there's someone who's really struggled through the book, like if they really didn't like the book and they've really made the effort to read it, and to then get there and people don't even bother to discuss it, it's like, oh, well, why would I bother next time making my way through the book you suggested if we're not even going to really talk about it? And I think the thing I always love about the book group, I still can this day remember in my Jakarta book group when an incredibly well-educated, smart international lawyer spent the entire book thinking that the lead character was a mermaid, and it all came out at book group that no, that not a mermaid. And...
what is that? What?
Exactly.
How do you think it's a mermaid?
She'd taken something very literally at the beginning of the book because she's quickly flipping back through the pages trying to show us where it said she was a mermaid. Anyway, I looked, Nikki, just a quick one in our Facebook group, because there was some fantastic ones, you know, people that had book groups that were called like the Lazy Girls book group, and, you know, lots of people that they said it was much more about catching up and whatever. But then there were other book groups where people were very, very serious. But I think you and I both loved the one in Port Moresby that was called the Drinking in Pools book club. But the last two words are fairly superfluous. I loved that.
Yeah, there was. And there was one that was the one my friend Nicole in South Africa went to, one where if you didn't read the book twice, you got thrown out the third time and she only made three meetings. So,
yeah. And I think you do have to have that mix of people that are deadly serious and people that aren't, so that almost you can get pushed along. I mean, I do try and make a point at each book group to go, okay, let's talk about the book, because everyone kind of settles in and starts chatting, and we always do. But, yeah, but I think there are some people that, yeah, it is super serious. You've got to take notes and, you know, you've really, it's very highbrow. That's not the book group for me, and I don't think that's probably what Drinking in Pools was.
So our book group here, we have our administrator who runs the Facebook group and puts out polls for books and determines all the books and runs the calendar. But then each meeting is hosted by somebody. And so that host has to come with a series of sort of, they lead the discussion. So they don't have to have lots of information or anything. But I guess what they might do, and what I always thought I would do, is Google some book discussions for the book and just sort of come with a printout with a few questions and just sort of just start a discussion. Yes. So when I've seen people at the host, they sort of just start the discussion, but I mean, it's not very hard work, but it's just saying, okay, you're responsible for this book.
Now, how is this for the ultimate expat book group? Is Helena in our Facebook group has said that she's currently back in her hometown of Stockholm, where she has a book group with members who all lived in Bangkok and belonged to the same book group 20 years ago.
That is amazing, isn't it? Isn't I saw it? That.
I love that. Like she said, we eat soup, bread and cheese, drink wine, and we chat a lot about life. But, I mean, that's my dream, to end up somewhere where I was with those people 20 years ago and be able to catch up and have a drink just once. But I can't imagine being able to catch up and do it once a month with people that you lived with 20 years ago. I think that's beautiful.
Yeah. No, I think that's fantastic. And that's an amazing thing about expat life, because sometimes you do end up with people you knew a long time ago.
Yes. So be nice.
Be nice to all your countrymen in case you're thinking of retiring to your home country. Okay, Kirsty, that's all about book club. So we'll, of course, put lots of links of what we've discussed there, articles, etc. And thank you to the Two Fat Expats Doha Book Club for providing us our content this week.
Yes. And I just do want to clarify, I didn't make them do it. But when when Christine put that message on our speak pipe, that's when I said, okay, well, let's just get them
well,
to
Well, I did listen it. to it and I sent it to you and I said, this is actually a really good idea.
Yeah. So thank you, Christine, for pushing us to do it because it was fantastic and lovely to listen to in the end.
Yes, and thank you to Christine, Sam, Trish, Catherine, Katerina, Kelly and Sue who all sent us lovely messages about book club.
Yes, and to our two new members joining us next month, don't be frightened.
Just make sure you listen to this podcast in advance.
Okay, for me with podcasts, Nikki, I don't have anything really new to report because I'm still listening to Dolly and oh, she's so gorgeous. Her giggle, I wish I could imitate her giggle. I might actually get Dolly's giggle and put it into the podcast because it's absolutely brilliant. So anyway, well, I'm still listening to Dolly and I just finished The Big Day Out this morning. What about you? What are you listening to?
Well, I am listening to two books at the moment, or I've listened to one. I've got the other one to do. So Catch and Kill, yes. Lies, Spies and a Conspiracy to Protect Predators by Ronan Farrow. And I finished that. And so I have started and I'm three quarters of the way through She Said, Breaking the Sexual Harassment Story That Helped Ignite a Movement by Jodi Kantor and Megan Toohey. So these two books, well, the authors of these two books won the Pulitzer Prize together for the reporting they did in breaking the Harvey Weinstein story. Mm. And the reason I'm reading, in inverted commas, them both is I heard on another podcast somebody say, I already had Catch and Kill loaded up, ready to go. And I heard someone say, you know, it was those women that broke the story first. And it was just Ronan Farrow just jumped on because he had all the Hollywood connections. And I thought, I really don't think that's the case. But just in case, I'm gonna read both the books and find out.
Yeah.
So I wanted to read both the books anyway. But I have a bit of a history of doing that. Long time ago, there's a book by John Krakauer, who's a great journalist. I really enjoy reading his books called Into Thin Air about the climb on Everest.
Yeah.
And he happened to be climbing Everest the year that a lot of people died on the climb and IMAX were there filming at the same time. It was just a I don't know how to say that word, of events. Anyway, and he wrote this great book. He's very engaging, great journalist. And I thought, that's great. What a great book. And I said to my husband, you've got to read this book. It's fantastic. And then I read somewhere, I think that was before I read the internet all the time, but I read in a newspaper an article about how one of the guides on another trip, that not the one that Krakauer was on, but the same season, had said what he said is just wrong. He's claiming things that are incorrect. And he had written a book. And so I immediately went out and read it. And it was not as engaging because Krakauer's obviously a journalist and he went with the idea of reading a book. And this other guy was a guide, a Russian guide in another tour group. But I just loved reading the same story from two different points of view. And they really had two different stories. There was two different sets of information. Obviously, all broadly along the same lines because the outcome was obviously the same. But ever since then, whenever there's two books about the same thing, I like to try and read them if I am. If I'm interested enough in the topic, I will definitely do that because I think, you know, it is your experience, your lived experience is how you see something. So one person sees something one way, another person sees it the other way with the same set of information.
So do you think Ronan Farrow ripped off their idea?
No, he didn't.
Confident that he didn't?
Because they both in their books list a timeline. So they talk about because they're journalists and they have recorded when they started researching. And I think they were doing it at the same time. There's no doubt. And in fact, I think the New York Times journalists started a little bit after, but they had a different intro into it. So the way they came across it, both sets of people came across it, was entirely different. And then the access and the information they had was also different when they were researching it. So they actually were able to contact different people for different reasons. And I really enjoyed Ronan Farrow's book and I'm a big fan of lots of things about Ronan Farrow. As soon as I heard the introduction to the She Said book, I thought, oh, I'm going to like this book better. So weird.
Oh,
just written
really?
Entirely, yeah, because it's just written entirely from a women's perspective. And interestingly, one of the, because they were chasing a lot of the same people and some people would talk to them and some people wouldn't, et cetera, et cetera. And one, they tell a story and she said where a husband says to a journalist, and this woman, this poor woman has been sexually harassed while she was at work, was made to sign an NDA, which meant she couldn't even tell her husband. So the journalist is saying, her husband's saying, why do you want to speak to my wife? And the journalist said, well, I had to think, would he know? Would he not know? What would happen? And she, it had been 20 years ago before she'd married her husband. And she said, the journalist said to the husband, well, you know, I think that something might have happened to her when she worked at Miramax and I wanted to talk to her about it. And he said, you know, there might have been some sort of settlement. And he said, he pointed to his house and he said, do it look like my wife got a big settlement, you know, before we got married? I think you're crazy. He said, but I want to know why all these journalists are chasing my wife. That you haven't, you know, you're not the first journalist that's been looking for her. And in another point, another part of the book, they said, one woman said, you're the first woman that's contacted me. Anyone that's wanted to speak to me about this has been a man. So I also feel in reading this book that there were some victims that preferred telling their story to a woman because these two were female journalists, because a lot of what they, you know, had to tell was very upsetting and very troubling. And they may have felt more comfortable discussing it with a woman. So I can really see both points of view and both. I'm loving it. I listened to Catch and Kill in about a day and a bit. I just put it on, and that's why I've got no new podcast this week, because all I've been doing is listening to books while I've been out and about and doing all my chores. Yeah, I had to drive an hour last night to take my daughter to a volleyball match on a Monday night. Who does that? I do. And I was like, great, this is fine. I'm happy to drive her because I can listen to the book all the way there and all the way back. So, yeah, so anyway, that's what I'm reading, Catch and Kill and She Said, and I'm really enjoying both of them.
It's interesting, the whole thing of two tales, isn't it? Because it's like when a particular theme of a movie comes out and then you notice there's four movies that all have similar ideas and it's all a race, right, to get it out first, because it's, you know, I guess it's like, you know, you're wearing the drop-waisted silk taffeta dress in green and then you find out your friend Sally is also going to wear one, but thank God hers is blue. But I feel the same with something I was going to talk about with, you know, because we both loved the podcast Who the Hell is Hamish. But yes. I can remember a few years ago there was a great article in the Good Weekend written by a woman called Stephanie Wood, who talked about meeting a guy online and then him being a complete and absolute fraud. And I can distinctly remember reading it and thinking when Who the Hell is Hamish, thinking, oh, is this that same story? No, I can't remember this bit, but thinking that it all sounded so similar, you know, someone who was trying to look like they lived a certain way and all the rest of it, and they were just a complete and absolute fake. But obviously she didn't marry him. But, yeah, I did listen to Stephanie Wood on Mia Friedman's podcast this week, because I'd heard that she'd, you know, written a book and that she was promoting it and she was doing interviews as well. But that's another thing, Nikki. Have you started, I think podcasting's taking, or sorry, searching for podcasts for me is taking a whole different route now, where I'm not so much looking for a series like I used to, but I might hear about a particular person and then just search their name and listen to all the podcasts that they've been on.
Absolutely. I do that all the time.
Yeah. So I think, for anyone that's podcasting, make sure that you tag your podcast with the people who are in them correctly so that we can find
note to self.
Yes, note to self. I think we actually have someone really quite well known on our podcast. I don't think we've tagged him at all. He doesn't even come up in the search when you look for him. So we've probably missed about 3 million hits on that. But Hey, Kesra.
Hey.
Okay, now I will put a link to something I watched actually on Facebook Watch, but it was through SBS and it was on the feed, and it's called Reality TV Survivors, and it's a 30-minute.
Oh, sounds sad.
Very good. It has the, I guess it's the real version of Unreal. Remember on Stan that was Unreal?
Yes. I do.
So it has a television producer who was responsible for shows like Big Brother and The X Factor, a couple of others, maybe Biggest Loser as well, I'm not sure, but, you know, quite a few reality shows. And then it's got interviews from people that were on reality shows and the effects it's had on their lives. It's really good. It is sad. They have a guy who was on The Bachelor who got the, what do they call it, the evil, it's not the evil cut, but when they decide who's going to be the evil person in the show, the evil edit.
The villain.
Yeah, the villain edit.
The villain.
Yeah,
or the
villain edit or whatever. So they had the guy that got the villain edit, and I really remember this, and I remember thinking he was a villain because it was in the early days of villain edits. I mean, now I think people watch reality TV and they watch that type of reality TV show, and they know that they're being sold.
They understand what's happening.
They understand what's happening. They go, oh, okay, so they've decided that that one's going to be the nice hometown girl that gets her heart broken, and that one's going to be the evil.
The baddie.
Yeah. That one's going to be the naughty one, and, you know, that one's going to be the desperado stage five clinger, you know, and you watch these people get edited to look that way, or people even play that way. But it was really interesting to have a producer tell you exactly how they choose people, and that no, they don't like smart people because they edit themselves too much, and they and just exactly what they kind of do, and that it's not so much that they're plying them with alcohol, they're plying them with sugar, and you know, then taking it away, and how they turn up all the lights really brightly, and they make all the colours really bright so that they start to, you know, sort of get a bit itchy and scratchy, and just what they do to these people, and you know, what they're looking for to get out of the talent. And the guy that they interviewed was, he was a model, but of course they sent him up in Australia as being, not just calling himself a model, they said, they made him look like he said he was an international model, and then he explained to you how they did that, because he said, oh, I'm a model, and they said, did you model overseas? And he said, yes. And they said, oh, so would you call yourself an international model? And he went, oh, yeah, I guess I'm an international model. And that was the bit they chose. Yeah, it just not nasty. Nasty, but sort of made me rethink watching any of that stuff with my kids as well.
Okay, so that's what we're reading and looking and watching. And now I spy with my expat eye, Kirstie.
Okay, so I wanted to ask you how we feel about this. So I saw on a expat website somewhere there was a conversation about a company that set up West Kent called Seniors Helping Seniors, and it's owned by a husband and wife team. And the guy who owns the company had said that we regularly get calls from UK expats across the globe whose parents are suddenly having difficulty living in their own home without a bit of help. And the problem is that, you know, the children are off living their expat life, and they can't, you know, they don't have the time to come back and look after mum and dad who's fallen over and broken a bone, or can't, you know, basically do the shopping, the cooking, the housework, the laundry, the pet care, the gardening, blah, 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 go to the doctors, rah, rah, rah. So this company is solely for expats who want to employ someone to go and do that home help, or, you know, the things that are missing, and sort of report back and let them know how mum and dad is. Now, I think this company now has something like 300 offices, and they recruit active seniors that provide the help in your own home. I just wondered, Nikki, what do you think about that? Because this is a conversation we have all the time in the expat world. I think just before you and I were popping online to record this, I think that was the last post, someone saying, has anyone else got elderly parents that have, you know, become ill, and how do you manage it, and what do you do, and how do you cope with the guilt and whatever. So what do you think?
Yeah, and we've talked about this before, yes, as well on a podcast, and we've talked about conversations to have with your siblings and family members when you're a far away person and they might not be. Look, I think in Western society, when your parents or elderly people tend to live separate to their family members, they don't live with their extended family when they become older and a little bit infirm, I think it's great. I think that for me, if I knew somebody was that I could trust was taking care of my, or just checking in, I don't think this is like, we're not talking nursing home care. This is just like checking in, making sure, you know, the dog's being fed and the flowers are being watered and the sheets are being changed, etc. Look, I'm for it, Kirsty, because one, the other thing is it's called Seniors Helping Seniors. So it's people who are active seniors. Mm. So they also have empathy in terms of what's going on in their lives. They're of a similar age, I imagine, and they've got similar cultural references and touchstones if they're in the same country. So yeah, I'm pro. What are you? Are you not pro?
No,
I'm just wondering what you think of it.
No, I'm definitely pro. I don't know what my mother would think of it if I sent someone.
Oh, well, that's the problem. You've got to have some. You've got to, like, the no one's ever going to accept the help. That's the thing. They're not going to love it.
Because I was thinking about that, but I was also thinking about the sad case of that. This is definitely a much needed product, right? I think in Australia, I don't know how you even run a company like that, because you'd have to have so many police checks now and, you know, all sorts of occ health and safety and whatever. And I mean, my sister does this role for the government. You know, that's what she, hello, Michelle, how are you? That's what she does for, she goes in and looks after old people and checks on them and takes them shopping and makes sure they're okay and does all of that. That is a government service. So I don't know how I felt about, imagine you've got five kids that are all over the place and not one of them can come and take you to the doctors, and so you outsource it. I guess I'd just seen the sadder side of it.
Yeah, well, you've got four kids, so I'm never expecting any of my kids to return if they ever leave the home. So you've got a better chance of that happening. But it's a service that needs, as we have an aging society.
Yes.
You know, and there are more people of a certain age than there are younger people. So, you know, and people have different abilities and different, you know, ways to get around. It's easier to, you know, do a hip or something when you're a bit older. Yes. You might need a bit of help. Yeah. If you're going to be sitting it for 6 weeks before you can get out the door, it'd be nice for someone to be able to drop groceries and water the plants and bring the mail in and that kind of stuff. And also a bit of company.
Yes.
From that point of view. So, look, I'm pro. I think it's a great, within communities, I think it's a great service.
Yes.
But as you said, you know, there are a lot of things to consider, police checks and health and safety, et cetera, et cetera. But if you can overcome those things,
I think that's it. I think this company, they don't do the washing, the dressing, the feeding, the giving medicine. And I imagine that's why they don't do that. But I guess it is just the, hi, I'm Kirsty. I'm here to take you to the doctors and I'm here to be your friend. Your kids have paid for me to come here and hang out with you and make sure you're okay. I guess there is a way that you present that to an elderly person.
I'm getting you some help at home, yeah. Mum. They'll come on Tuesdays and Thursdays.
That's true.
Let me know when you've got a doctor's appointment. Oh, totally. I mean, there are different ways to present it. But yeah, obviously, we're looking at different sides of the same glass or cup.
And I think too, you've got your dad at home, right? Who probably would be, I guess, quite open to areas. I think my mother would still be in the, Who?
Oh, God, yeah. No.
Who have you sent to my?
My father wouldn't let anyone in his house. He'd say, he'd use very strong language.
Yeah.
But you know, like he has a problem with his, he played rugby.
Yes.
For a lot of years, and he has nerve damage that he had operated on and can't be repaired. So his toes can't move. So he can't, you know how often you use your toes? Think about that.
Yes.
So he has a lot of trouble with mobility. He rides his bike every day and swims in the ocean because he lives at the beach on the Gold Coast. But walking is very hard for him. To walk a long way, he can't do that. He can ride his bike and he can't walk up hills or steps. Like he has to do it sideways because you can't think about when you walk how your foot goes.
Yeah.
He's never going to listen to this. So don't feel pity for him. He's not frail at all, but he has this problem that's very frustrating and very difficult to manage. So at some stage, my brother and I will be having that conversation.
Yes.
For help around the house, I imagine, or groceries or all that kind of stuff.
Hey, speaking of not being able to use your toes, just quickly, Dolly Parton tells a story in episode 2. Climbing a fence, cuts all her toes on a mason jar. She's like, poor as poor, family of 12 kids up in the hills of Tennessee. Mum lays her down. They pour kerosene over her toes. Mum gets out the needle and stitches her toes back on. Still there today.
Oh, my God. I really, when I'm finishing, she said, I'm straight to Dolly. Straight to Dolly. Okay, I've got to go. I've just missed a very important phone call. I'll have to call them back.
All right.
But great chatting, and look forward to doing it again next week.
Okay, bye now.
Bye-bye.